So we're doing the Rambam's intro to Sefer HaMitzvot. We're in the Shoresh Rishon, the first root. And the Ramban, we're in the middle of the Ramban's counterattack against the Rambam. And the Ramban had mentioned the 18 institutions that were made on that day when Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel. And David, you remember the first five we did last week? Oh, so those were really the institutions, only they break down into five. Ha'ochel ochel rishon, that's one. Ha'ochel ochel sheni, that's two. Ha'shotem mashkin tmein, that's three. The first three is that if someone eats something defiled or drinks something defiled, even though that food or liquid technically, biblically, cannot defile his body, Chazal forbade him from eating truma until he goes to mikveh, which is a new institution. No such concept in the Torah. This food doesn't make him defiled. But Chazal said, this was Beis Shammai's institution, and Beis Hillel were outnumbered on that day, that a guy might come to eating his pizza and having a coke of truma, right? So in those days, they didn't have pizza. He's eating his pita, which is tamei, and he's going to have a cup of wine, which is truma. So even though technically his body is not tamei, but in his mouth they'll mix, and then he will have defiled truma, which is prohibited. So Chazal said, we're making an institution to ensure that people don't come to eating tamei food with truma, or tamei drink with truma. They said, if you ate something tamei, ochel rishon, ochel sheni, mashkin tmein, you must go to mikvah before you can eat or drink any truma. So those are the first three institutions. Number four was Haba roshov rubo b'mayim shuvim. And number five is tohor gamush nafilo al roshov rubo shloshet lugin mayim shuvim. If someone went to mikvah, so we said their mikvahs would be like in caves. They'd have standing water, which was stinky, and then afterwards they'd wash themselves in the shower. And then people came to think it's the shower that's purifying them. So the rabbis instituted: if you go to mikvah and then go and pour regular water on yourself, you become defiled all over again. Rabbinic institution. Then people started saying, hey, how does that work? How come when I take a shower every day, I don't become defiled, but when I do it after mikvah, I do? So they saw it wouldn't work. So they said, okay, you're right. You take a shower, you become tamei too. So that's number four and five. That's why I said, you got all five. They just break down. So it's not a heavy tuma. It's a rabbinic zera for tuma. But those were the five zerot we discussed last time. So that's Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Hey. The first five, yeah?
Does anyone actually hold by that today? I understand we don't really have tuma as such, but what's the point of... I mean, everybody just takes a shower after going to mikvah.
Yeah, fine. Enjoy your shower. Don't worry about it. Okay, what's Vav?
What?
What you're going to do is not, as far as I understand, there's no point in going to mikvah.
Does it even matter today is what I should say, not that does anybody hold on?
Yeah, okay, so I don't remember Vav, maybe it'll come back to me, or we'll look it up later. Zayin is stam yadayim, that hands, if you haven't watched them, the whole concept that stam yadayim tmeot, that hands, if you haven't taken care that they're pure, are impure, that was an institution of that day. So if you want to touch truma, we say if you touch it with your hands without having checked that they were clean and washing them, so you've disqualified the truma. So that's a rabbinic institution of that day. Then we have En Polin Men Korin Loraner, that they made a rabbinic prohibition that you're not allowed to take out lice from your clothing or read a book next to an oil lamp on Shabbos, because you might come to tilt the oil lamp. In their days, the lamps would flicker, and it was standard procedure that when the lamp flickered, you tilt it. So people didn't even think about it. You know, it's like walking out of a room and shutting the light. How many times do you do that? And then you say, hey, it's Shabbos, right? So in their days, as they were reading, you know, if the light was flickering, they'd do this, and they wouldn't even think about it. So the rabbi said, "En polin men korin oraner." You can't do these two acts, which require focus. Taking the lice out of the garments or reading a book next to the lamp, unless you have someone there watching that you don't tilt the lamp or other things. So that's two rabbinic institutions. they instituted that kol ha-metatlin mevin tatuma be'ovi ha-mardea, that ordinarily in order to have an ohel to bring tuma from one place to another, you need to have that the item that's going to be. You guys know what tuma's ohel is? Do you know what ohel? Ohel is a tent. So the Torah says, if you have a dead body in a tent, everything in the tent becomes tameh. What happens if you walk next to a dead body and you're carrying an umbrella? So we say that umbrella that's a canopy over you and the dead body makes you tameh. How big is the minimum size that something has to be in order for the tumah to spread under it? So the halacha says a tefah, a hand's width. A tefah. Now, what happens if a guy is carrying on his back, he's carrying a broom. And the broom handle, that round stick, well, its circumference going around is a tefah. It's a thick broom handle. But its width, its diameter is no tefah, right? Its diameter is going to be a third of a tefah. So Chazal saw that people were getting confused. So Chazal said, if you're going to carry something round, if it has the circumference of a tefach, that also constitutes an ohel. Even though technically it doesn't have the width of a tefach, it doesn't have the diameter of a tefach, Chazal still said, that's one of the institutions of that day. I'm oversimplifying it. I'm going with Rashi, there's a Tosfos. But okay, we're good. Rashi's good enough for us. Yeah, okay. So that's another takana. And then they said, a person who's traveling on Friday, and it's getting close to dark. So what people used to do is, if they had a wallet with them and they haven't yet hit town, so they're in public domain, they'd walk 3 amos and stop. Another 3 amos and stop. Because you're not allowed to carry something 4 amos in public domain. Under 4 amos isn't prohibited biblically. So people would carry 3 amos and stop. Then another 3 and stop. And you know what happens. Oh boy, my wife's going to have my head. I'm coming home late. The chum's going to be burnt. Eventually, he takes a 4th footstep. Before he knows it, he did a biblical prohibition. So the rabbi said, okay, here's what you're going to do. If you're traveling with a non-Jew, give him your wallet. Let him carry it the whole way. Instead of, you could put it on, yeah. If a guy's coming on Friday afternoon, instead of carrying it less than 4 amos, give it to the non-Jew and let him carry it into the city for you. So that's another institution they made that day. What? I don't remember. No, a lot of this isn't relevant today. The next one is Yud Bet Habotzer Anavim Lagat. It's easy to remember. Yud Bet Botzer Anavim Lagat. A guy who is harvesting grapes, and he's going to press those grapes. So we know that in order for something to be mikabel tuma, in order for a food item to be able to become tameh, it must have come in contact with one of the 7 liquids. Right? 7 liquids, yad, shachat, dam. That's the acronym. Yad, yain, or dvash, shachat, shemen, chalav, tal, dam, and maim. Those are the 7 liquids. These 7 liquids are the only liquids that can become tameh, and they are the only liquids that are machshir lekabel tumah, that make something else susceptible to becoming tameh. So a guy is harvesting grapes, and as he's harvesting, some of the grapes get squeezed in his hand, and he has some grape juice dripping on the grapes. So Beis Shammai said, if he's going to take those grapes to press them and make grapes or wine, so he's happy with that grape juice that's on the grapes, right? It saves him part of the work. And we say that in order for a liquid to be machshir, in order for a liquid to make the food susceptible to tumah, it must have come in contact with the food in a manner that you are happy. Let's say you have grapes, and you want the grapes to be dry. You're going to make raisins out of them. And someone else comes and pours water on them, or rain falls down on them. Then we say you didn't want that liquid to come in contact with the grapes. That liquid is not machshir. It does not make the grapes susceptible to tumah. So when you pick the grapes off the tree, on the one hand, you know if some of the juice is going to come out, they might rot more quickly. you're not necessarily too happy with that juice coming out and dripping all over the grapes, right? And chances are it'll drip on the floor and you'll lose some of the grape juice you could have had. So technically, biblically, that juice should not be machshir. It should not make the grapes susceptible to tumah. Along came Beit Shammai and said, yeah, but there are people who harvest their grapes and they're carrying baskets that are lined with tar so that when the juice drips, it all collects in the basket. It won't drip out of the basket. That's called a botzer bekupot mesufafot. A person who's harvesting and his baskets are lined. Our day equivalent would be you're harvesting with plastic buckets, right? You don't care if the juice comes out. You'll just pour it into the vat and it'll be part of your grape juice. So Beis Shammai said, being that there are times when a person is happy with the grape juice that came out, so any time a person harvested and juice came out, that's machshir lekabel tumah. Habotzer anavim lagat, mashke azav mehin, the liquid that flows out of them is machshir, makes them susceptible to tumah. So far, so good? Okay. Just 1 second. Yad shachat dam. Yad shachat dam. Yayin, wine, dvash, honey, shemen, oil, chalav, milk, tal, dew, dam, blood, mayim, water. They are mekabel tuma and they are machshir lekabel tuma. Both. Machshir lekabel tuma means that any food item does not become tameh, even if it comes in contact with a dead man. It will not become tameh unless it first came into contact with one of these seven liquids. So if you harvested your wheat and you have dry wheat, it cannot become tameh. It's only after you're going to grind it and make it into flour and mix it with water that it can become tameh. Or if you do something else that causes it to come in contact with the liquid. Okay. Yud Gimel, after it's been harvested, right. Yud Gimel is Gidulei Teruma Terumayim. Yud Gimel Gidulei Teruma. The 13th is when you, if you would take Truma and plant it, so technically the food that grows from the Truma that was planted is not holy. They instituted that it is Gidulei Teruma Teruma. Then we have Yudalid. I'm not doing it in order anymore. I don't remember it in order. Then they said Pat Nochri. That's something that's relevant today. That we're not allowed to eat bread, even if all the ingredients are kosher, if it was made by a non-Jew. You're not allowed to eat that. They said you can't eat bread because you might end up to eating oil. You can't eat oil because if you do oil, you might end up doing wine. You can't do wine because if you do wine, you'll end up marrying his daughter. Pitan mishum shamnan, shamnan mishum yenan, yenan mishum davar acher. So the way it works is if you're going to drink with him in the bar, you're going to meet his daughter, and Lucy might find favor in your eyes and look at the intermarriage rate all over the world. So, you know, in the United States, it's like 70% intermarriage rate. So, Chazal said no drinking together. They said, yeah, but if you want people not to drink wine so they don't end up marrying the daughters, you have to say that there's no selling, no buying oil from them either. Because if you're going to end up taking stam yenam, taking their wine, even if it's wine that you don't know they did anything wrong with. Wine and oil go hand in hand. And if you want to keep the oil off the market, you got to keep the bread off the market because that's another basic staple item. Pitan mishum shamnan, shamnan mishum yenan, yenan mishum davar acher. Yes.
In all places in Europe, the bread that the Gentiles are making, the ingredients is kosher. Only in specific days, the oven is kind of from the Jew. So if that gets granted somewhere, you don't have any food, and then you starve, here it's better to still buy that bread, even if I know it's not kind of from the Jew, because I know it's ingredients is important.
Right, so there's a leniency. That's called pas palter, the bread of a baker. They say the baker, he's not, it's not like your next door neighbor who brings you freshly baked bread. Your neighbor brings you freshly baked bread. Next thing you know, he's inviting you under his Christmas tree. But the baker, well, he's selling bread to the whole town. We're not worried just because you bought a loaf of bread at ShopRite that you're going to marry Mr. Wonderbread's daughter. We're not worried about that, right? Right, there's a leniency already quoted in the Talmud called pas palter, bread of a baker. That's even when it wasn't kindled by a Jew, because it's mass-produced. And then they made another decree, and that's davar acher mishum davar acher. What does that mean? They said another thing: a Jewish boy may not play with a non-Jewish boy. How are they going to do this? So they said non-Jewish children are tamei, and if a Jewish boy plays with him, he becomes tamei. Why did they do that? Because the Greeks of the time, the Romans and the Greeks, were rampant homosexuals. And they were worried that if a Jewish boy plays with a non-Jewish boy, he'll teach him how to do that. And then they'll end up being boyfriend and boyfriend. And then wait a second, it boggles the mind. They weren't worried about anything else in Chinuch. They were worried about the children playing together and learning that type of behavior. That's why when people tell me, you know, it's only pedophiles, it's only wackos, what are you worried about? What do you mean? Chazal were worried. Chazal made a whole institution that he's tamei, so because they said if he's going to learn that behavior, they'll be boyfriend and boyfriend, and it's over. So you ask yourself, wait a second, they weren't worried about his midos. They weren't worried he's going to teach him how to be a pagan. That not. They said the only way he'll capture him is if he could get him into that activity. So you see that activity, we don't look at it the way people think, oh, they're abnormal, they're crazy, they're this, they're that. No. And you see that Chazal were concerned that once he's exposed to it, he might be attracted to it and stick to it. People today look at them and they say, what's wrong with them? Well, you guys never tried it. Baruch Hashem, you know. We don't know. But we know from Chazal that Chazal saw that it can have its attraction. I know what I'm saying isn't something you like to hear. It's not something I like to say, but it's what we see from this institution, in my humble opinion. Yeah.
I thought that was because they swim and play some sports naked. It's the whole thing about why, the Olympic Games were originally naked, and huge swaths of people and generations wouldn't circumcise their sons so that their sons could be Olympians.
I'm unfamiliar with this. What I'm telling you is the way I understood the Talmud in the first chapter of Shabbos. You could look it up. Gemara Rashi about Yud Zayin Amud Beis, somewhere around there. Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Yeah, should be over there. Okay, then they made a decree. Bnot Kutim, this was number Yud. We skipped this. Bnot Kutim, Etamot Nidot Marisotehen. That the daughters of the Kutim, the pagan daughters, they from the minute they're born, we say they're Tamei. And this is, again, to maintain a distance between us and them, so that people don't come into close contact with them. Now we skipped. Give me 1 second, I'll look up. I skipped one or two. Let me look it up. I skipped Vav, Ches, and Tes. So there was Bnot Kutim. Let me look it up.
I believe in that time.
I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to
Oh, the next one was number six, I forgot, was that works of Tanakh are mitame. We learned this, we discussed this already a month or two ago, that the works of Tanakh, people used to store their truma by their scrolls of Tanakh. They'd say, this is holy, it's all good, let's keep it together. And then what happened is the mice would come to eat the food of Truma, and they'd end up destroying the Sifrei Torah and the Nevi'im and the Ksuvim. So the rabbis made an institution that that the works of Tanakh are mitameh teredaim, they defile your hands. If you touch a Sefer Torah or a Nevi'im or a Ksuvim, your hands, with those hands you're not allowed to touch Truma. And if that would touch Truma, it would disqualify the Truma. So then people were careful. They wouldn't let their Truma come close without any books of Tanakh. So that was a way of protecting it. Yeah?
Is that just the letters?
What do you mean by just...
the entire scroll.
The entire scroll. Okay. And then Ches and Tes that we left out was they expanded the Gzeira of Stam Yadayim. Remember we said that hands, if you touch Zayin was Stam Yadayim. Remember we said that hands that you haven't watched over, those hands are Tamei, they disqualify Truma. So Ches was that they said that anything that would come in contact with a liquid would make it a rishon l'tumah. Meaning ordinarily, if let's say you have something that's a rishon l'tumah and it touches a liquid, the liquid is sheni l'tumah, biblically. They said even if a sheni l'tumah touches a liquid, so it should be a shlishi l'tumah, which is non-existent when it comes to chulin at least, they said no, anything that comes in contact with a liquid makes it into a rishon. Why did they do that? Because they said if a sheretz touches liquid, a sheretz is an avatuma, he would make the liquid into a rishon. So we will make every liquid as though it's a liquid that's come in contact with the sheretz. And then they took that gzera a step further. And they said any liquid will not only be a rishon l'tumah, but it'll be an unusual liquid rishon l'tumah, in that ordinarily Rishon Natoma can't make a vessel Tameh. We said, Adam Mekelim, a human being in a vessel, could only become Tameh from an Avatoma. They said, we're going to make liquids so stringent that they're a Rishon Natoma, but they could also be Metameh a vessel. That was the ninth Gzerah that we skipped. So those were the Gzerot that we skipped, the sixth, the eighth, and the ninth. Everything else I think we covered. Okay, so those were the 18. You guys want to, we should review them quickly? Aleph, ha'ochel ochel rishon. Bet, ha'ochel ochel sheni. Gimel, ha'shoteh mashkim tmeim. Someone wait. The first two was if you ate food that was defiled, rishon or sheni. The third one was if you drank something defiled, you're puzzle for touching truma. Dalit, hey, was a person who went to mikveh. That was Dalit. Or hey, was any ordinary person who poured on his head 3 lug of water. Becomes Tameh, he's not allowed to touch. If he touches Truma, he disqualifies it. Vav was that the holy works, if they touch Truma, they disqualify them. Zayin was Stam Yadayim, that our hands, if we haven't been watching them, if they touch Truma, they disqualify it. Ches was that liquids that come in contact with anything that's defiled, Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi, become a Rishon L'tuma. Tes was that that liquid is not only a Rishon L'tuma, but it can even make kelim tameh. Yud was bnot kutim etamot nidot me'arisotehim, that the daughters of the kutim, the pagan daughters, we say from the minute they're born, they're tameh. The idea is because the kutim didn't accept the oral law. And our oral tradition has it that even a baby from one day old, if she sees her period, she becomes tameh. And very often girls, the first day or two that they're born from hormones, will have staining, as though they'll have menstruation. Girls can hormonally, that could happen, that a girl will see some blood, and we have on tradition that she's Tameh. The Kutim didn't accept that. They said, ah, baby, she's not Tameh. So they wouldn't warn us. So the rabbi said, wait a second. They're not going to tell us if their girls are Tameh. Because they don't consider them tameh till they're much older. They don't accept our tradition. So from now on, all daughters of Kutim are tameh. That was the 10th zirah. The 11th zirah was that we look at the circumference of a round vessel, even though technically in order to bring oil, tumat oil, you need a diameter of a tefach. We treat things with the circumference of a tefach as though it had a diameter of a tefach. The 12th was Yud Bet Habotzer Anavim Legat, someone who's harvesting grapes, the liquid that flows from it makes it susceptible to Tuma. Yud Gimel is Gidulei Teruma Teruma, if you've planted Truma, then what grows is also Truma. Yud Dalid was that if you're traveling and gets dark, you give your wallet to an non-Jew, you don't carry it less than 4 amos. The 15th and 16th were En Polin Men Korin Lo Raner. When you're buying oil lamp, you don't take out the lice or read a book because you might come to tilt it. The 17th was that we don't eat non-Jewish bread, which included bread and oil and wine, so that we don't come to marry their daughters. And the 18th is that we don't let that non-Jewish child is Tameh, so that the Jewish children won't be frequent with the non-Jewish children and learn that type of improper behavior from them. So those are the 18. Okay, and we'll have to pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next time, next month. We'll pick up here in the Ramban. If you're wondering why we went on such a tangent, I think that one of our goals in learning this is to cover these tangents, because this way you guys are covering a lot of concepts in Shas. That's one of the goals of this learning, to cover all the tangents, to explain each example the Ramban brings as best as we can, so that you'll end up walking away from this learning with many concepts, not just the Rambam.
I have one question. Before davening,